Deadheads, welcome to another episode of Cigar Chat. I'm your guest co-host, John the Cigar Surgeon, broadcast live on CigarFederation.com, heard around the world, picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Cigar Chat is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars, manufacturers of the world's finest cigars. Try the new 93-rated Heritage cigar today. I'm, of course, here with my host, the regular host, Logan, the MFN CEO. Logan, what's going on tonight, brother?
Dude, I can't hear you. Your volume's too low, John.
I can turn that up for you, man. No problem.
Thank you, John. I'd really appreciate that.
Logan is, of course, referring to me busting his nether regions Cajones before the show because, you know, I am pretty particular about quality. And Logan upped his game a while ago. I mean, you upped your video and audio game a while ago.
I did. But no, I mean, everything's good, man. It's a little hot in Texas. I think it was like 95 today. But yeah, things are peachy.
Good stuff. Well, it's raining here, which is why I'm not smoking right now. Otherwise, I'd be getting completely covered in rain, which I was tempted to just hold an umbrella over my head for the entire show, but I realized that probably wasn't going to work for the computer equipment. So, of course, people are not here to really see my face or listen to me. They're here for our guest, our special guest tonight, Manolo Casado. Manolo, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
Now, where are you calling in from? Because I see it looks like there's some wine bottles and some tasty treats behind you there. Where are you calling in from right now?
This is my office at home. This is where I hide and work and smoke and drink and listen to music and my books and reading and do all kinds of weird old people stuff.
I was curious because it looks like a water bong behind your left shoulder there.
Behind my left shoulder?
Thing? Yeah. It's the glass thing with the...
All right, is it a white? Yeah, that is an Asturian decanter, handmade, and handmade for me.
Wow. For wine?
From the Spain region of Spain. It can be used for anything, sherries, brandies, wine, anything you want.
I learned something new. Okay.
Right now it's empty, though, so that's the only one that's empty for the time being. And I lost sound. Hello?
No, we're still here.
That was me not picking up the – I was distracted by the chat room there. People were giving me a hard time. Sorry about that. So
John's failing.
I'm failing as my – normally what I do is
– I'm just going to off you like Goose. We're just going to go down in a blaze of glory, but you're not making it.
Goose and Maverick, they were brothers, Logan. And, I mean, Maverick was upset.
Hey, so were Cain and Abel too. So were Cain and Abel, and see how well that worked out?
Yeah.
That was a darker story than Maverick and Goose, though. I think because Maverick didn't kill Goose. He died, but he didn't kill Goose.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean.
Anyways, continue, John.
Anyways, I was gonna say so, Manolo, can you? You guys just had, if I'm not mistaken, Casado just had the 40th anniversary of you being in the Dominican Republic back in 2014. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Couple of years ago, we're now on our starting our 43rd year here with the factory in Santiago.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I mean your family's history goes back well into the 1800s in tobacco. Can you give our audience maybe a little bit of background? I mean, whether you want to do the condensed version or all that stuff's really fascinating to our audience. Can you give us a little bit of background of your family's history with tobacco and maybe a little bit about the Dominican Republic as well?
Indeed. My great-grandfather and his brother were sent from Spain to Cuba, and the family were bakers in Cuba. When they arrived in Cuba, a debt had been paid to the bakery in tobacco, and the elder said, there's too many of us, you two young ones, take that tobacco and make a living. They started dealing in tobacco in Cuba in 1876. They split up in 1902 and created two companies, my great-grandfather and his brother, that today are still here in Dominican Republic in exile, where we're 2 miles away in the town of Licey, in the outskirts of Santiago. So we're not cigar makers in Cuba. We were leaf brokers. We would buy tobacco from the farms, ferment, sort, pack, and sell as raw materials for factories all over the world. After we donated everything in 1960 to the new government, we moved over to Dominican Republic. We had been coming to Dominican Republic since 1939. The family started in Dominican out of Cuba in 1939. We would buy tobacco from Dominican Republic. So the good move was to come to Dominican. We knew the tobaccos. We knew the people. And we started afresh in 1961 in Santiago in Dominican Republic as leaf brokers again. And that went on until 1974, when the family somehow or other decided to start a cigar factory. And in the family raffle, I got the winning ticket. So my brother, who had just come out of the Jesuit seminary, my father said, your brother just got back from the seminary, got out. Let him stay with me, and you go start the cigar factory. So I was given $100, four bales of tobacco, a wooden table, a chair, a phone, and three cigar makers to start the factory in a building with no power. So we had to make cigars by the windows to take advantage of the sunlight. That was in June of 1974. And to today, we're still making cigars in Dominican Republic and enjoying ourselves immensely by dealing with tobacco and handling blends and playing with new products. And of course, now with the FDA, it's going to put a damper on all our enthusiasm a little bit, but we're still fighting and trying to get things rearranged a little bit. Basically, in a nutshell, and that's a five-cent tour of the Quesada family in tobacco from 1876 to 2016.
That's a lot of history packed in a very short period of time.
Well, I'm the fourth generation of the family, and also the gentleman you met earlier, my nephew, and my two daughters and niece, and Terrence is from the American side of the family, because Terrence Riley is a Quesada, but since in the United States you don't use but one surname, this Quesada is behind the Riley. And they're the fifth generation of the family, now second generation cigar makers.
So let me ask you this, with so much time, I mean, obviously the dealing with the tobacco in Dominican Republic predates your time being in the Dominican Republic. How is the tobacco change? I mean, since 1939, how has the tobacco changed in the Dominican Republic? It must have been an enormous number of changes in that time period.
Oh, good heavens, yes. Before 1963, the only seeds that were available in Dominican Republic were the Criollo, which is a Dominican seed, and the Olor, which is also a Dominican seed. And both were used mainly for cigarettes. Back then, the dark cigarettes, dark tobacco cigarettes, were a big thing. If you remember the Jetons and the Galois from France, Spain had a huge production of dark cigarettes. And the tobaccos that were being used were Cuba and Dominican Republic for their blends. But back then, there were only two seeds. In 1963, the Piloto Cubano was brought in by the Torano family and started to be grown in Dominican Republic. So that brought in a new seed to Dominican Republic that was meant exclusively for long filler handmade cigars. So we started the stripping operations to make long filler, which Dominican Republic had never been famous for. A long filler for handmade premium cigars. After that, up to today, the number of seeds and varieties grown in Dominican Republic has grown immensely. The Olor and the Criollo are still available. The Criollo is still being mainly used for cigarettes and for short filler cigars. The Olor is still used as binder and fillers in the premium handmade industry. And we have Cuban seeds that have been grown in Dominican Republic now for a number of years. The San Vicente, the Havana 2000, the Havana 92, the Corojo, the 2020, Piloto Cubano Mejorado, which is a better hybrid of the original Piloto Cubano, Criollo 98. So all these are now brought new varieties into Dominican Republic, which allows us to blend even wider with Dominican tobaccos, all from the regions that we buy and grow here in the area of Santiago.
So I assume based on that, I would assume based on the variety of tobaccos, it's never a downside to having so many tobaccos to work with. I'm assuming the more varietals they can come up with, the more interesting blends you can essentially create.
Indeed, your platter is a lot wider when you can blend from different farms, different regions, different seeds, and different foliar stages. Your plate is so full that you have innumerable ways to go to create new things. Also using the Olor as binder and or filler. So the Olor comes in as well to add more things to the plate. I'm sorry to interrupt, also in the last, wrappers have been started in Dominican Republic 25 years ago. And today there's a large variety as well of Dominican wrappers that can be used and are being used for Dominican Puros and Dominican Blends in the different brands that are being made in Dominican Republic. So our plate is really well filled with wrappers, binders, and fillers exclusively from Dominican Republic. Let's add now Brazil, Peru, Ecuador, Nicaragua, Honduras, Mexico, United States, and the platter becomes even bigger. So your selection is really wide when it comes to blending, and also wide when it comes to making Dominican puros. So today, yes, it is a unique and special time to be making cigars in Dominican Republic.
So with such a variety of tobaccos available specifically in the Dominican Republic, when you create a cigar, would you say that your typical go-to would be to create a puro Dominican, or do you tend to like to bring in tobaccos from other regions?
We that play with tobacco don't like to constrain ourselves to a definite project. We start by saying, what do we want to create? Do we want to create something mild with a lot of flavor, a little more intense with a lot of flavor? Do we want to what do we want to concentrate on? What do we want to create? And then we start playing with different tobaccos. And sometimes you make a blend with strictly Dominican tobaccos and you go, I want to go in a different direction. Then you bring in another origin, whether it's Brazil or Peru or Mexico or Nicaragua. And you start adding little pieces to the puzzle and you get to where you want to go. Sometimes you make a puro and you go, this is exactly what I was looking for. You stop and you go and done. So we don't limit ourselves to what we're creating when creating new blends and new product developments.
I know when developing a new product, most blenders will have a particular style. Some will start with wrapper, some will start with filler. I've even heard some starting with binder. Do you typically have a style that you approach the blend with, or is every blend unique to itself?
No, because with the coming into the company of the young ones, they have brought a new dimension into the mix. When I was young, we had three cereals and three Cokes or Pepsi, Royal Crown. That was it. That was our plate. Your generation and my daughters and nephews and so on, you have been exposed to a mixture of tastes that we were not exposed. You have mango with pineapple and strawberries and kiwi and bananas and coconut. And your palate, in my very humble and very only opinion, is that your palate is capable of recognizing sensations that my palate wasn't used to. So I have had to learn to recognize other sensations in my palate by sitting with my young ones, because they go, I get something sweet and a little acid, lemon or tangerine, and I go, what the hell are you talking about? Because I'm not used to this. And I've had to learn and sit with them, and it has been a learning and very enjoyable and a lot of fun experience. So again, we don't sit down and say we have a style, or because the market doesn't have a style. The market demands different things.
Right.
Each smoker is a unique universe, and trends develop. The market moves in different directions, and one has to follow or attempt to engage oneself in the trends that are happening in the market. So we don't sit down and say, let's make our style of blending is mild, so let's make mild cigars. No, we go and let's sit down and smoke and see where we get to, and let's see what we can come up with.
Now, I'm going to come back to that question in a minute, before I do that, I want to remind our audience that you're tuned into Cigar Chat, broadcast around the world and on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Our first segment is brought to you by Cigar Oasis, the leader and innovator in measuring and controlling humidity in the cigar industry. Are your cigars protected by Cigar Oasis? Set it and forget it today. So, prior to us kicking off the show, Manolo, we were talking Scotch very briefly there, and Scotch is something that's very near and dear to my heart. And I would actually say that because I've been cooking really since I was about 5 years old, and for me, cooking has really helped my palate. But I found a lot that Scotch, believe it or not, has really expanded my palate, because Scotch has really taught me how to taste in different ways. Have you found, because you're mentioning you're sitting with your kids and sort of learning how to taste different things, have you found that spirits or other things like that have really helped that process?
Oh, indeed. I am a fan of Scotch whiskeys, not the peaty ones. I cannot do the peaty ones. It tastes like iodine.
That's very apt, yeah, very much so.
And in a sabbatical I took in 1969, we had to take iodine pills into our water.
I got
an aversion to iodine, and the peaty scotches taste to me like iodine.
Yeah.
So I'm more into the wood cask scotches, single malts. And I do have some favorites, my go-tos. As a matter of fact, to your health, I'm having an Aberlour 18 tonight.
Slangeva. I am going to let Logan take over at some point here and reach behind me get a glass and have a dram or two myself if Logan is so inclined. But
go ahead. Go ahead. I got questions. Manolo, question for you.
Sure.
So you kind of started as tobacco brokers. You moved your way into, the manufacturing side. And now you also do distribution as well.
Yes,
can you talk a little bit about the brands that you do distribution for and how that kind of SAG kind of came about?
Well, SAG is our importing company in Miami, where we bring cigars in from Dominican Republic, of course, Nicaragua as well, and Honduras, all three countries. And Nicaragua, which is our, we bring in Casa Magna, which is a brand that the family owns, and Regis, which is owned by Akil Capachi, but we represent Regis in the United States. From Dominican Republic, we also have Casa Magna, Casada, and Fonseca, which are the three. Casa Magna, Fonseca, and Casada are the three main brands that we're distributing today that belong to us, other than Regis and, of course, Osecho Cejas.
Matilde.
La Matilde, which we're also representing in the United States for them.
Got it. Okay. So,
And Terrence Riley, my nephew, is the one running SAG in Miami, so he's the one that is more in contact with y'all.
Well, yeah. I mean, we talk with Terrence quite a bit, actually. A question, I mean, this is curiosity. So you started with, a couple of rollers, $100 in your pocket. You went from that, I think you said 1973. One year off, 1974. So how many cigars?
1974, yes, sir.
1974. Yeah. What year did you? How many cigars did you produce last year?
Last year we were close to 5.
Like million?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I was gonna say. Well, I hope it's more than 5. I guess they still have the electricity turned off down in the factory, and all they can work on.
Now have sunny days. When the power goes off, which it does occasionally in Dominican Republic.
Yeah, it happens. So, you've kind of been in the industry a long time. I mean, obviously, when you look at families that have been in tobacco for a long time, I mean, obviously, your name is kind of at the top of the list. What do you think, since you have such a long period you've been in the industry, what was over your, let me do the math here, 40, 50, over 40 years, actually a little bit longer than that. What was the biggest happened over the course of your career in tobacco that made both a positive change in the cigar world and made a negative change in the cigar world? And it doesn't have to be recent. It could be something from the 70s or whatever you think. But what are those defining moments?
Logan, I have the answers right at the tip of my tongue. The best thing that ever happened to me I started in tobacco when I was 13. I'm 69, so I've been at it for 56 years, of which 42 and a half are cigar making. The best thing that ever happened to me was the coming into the factory of the young ones, my two daughters, my nephews, and my niece, because they brought, as I said before, a new dimension in the blending, a lot of enthusiasm, and a lot of change. You're familiar, we make the Oktoberfest cigars.
Oh, yes.
That's a seasonal cigar that comes out right now. We're in the middle of that. And Terrence, my nephew, came to the office and said, "Uncle, I'm going to have 2 mugs of beer in the front of the box." And I looked at him and I said, "Over my dead body." Well, if you see a box of Oktoberfest, it has 2 beer mugs in the front. So they walked over my dead body and they put the mugs in. So they brought changes that in my time I wouldn't have done. And it has all been thankfully to the good. And now I can sit back and say, I shouldn't have sat over my dead body, but I did. And the worst thing that ever happened to me is so recent that it's still fresh. It's the FDA, gentlemen. The FDA is going to put an umbrella and a shadow over our industry that's going to be, without being damaging to the health of the United States smokers, it's going to put a damper on the choices and the ability that we have to create different tastes, different sensations, different aromas, because there will be a definitely curtailment of new things coming into market. So I would have to say that dealing with the FDA is the worst thing that has ever happened to me, though ruining a lot of tobacco in my lifetime was also a bad thing. I learned by ruining tobacco, and I've ruined a whole bunch of pounds of tobacco in my life behind the back of my elders, because if they'd have found out, I'd have been killed.
So what, I mean, you guys have had cigars in the market for a long time. I mean, what of your blends actually would meet the February, I think it's 15th date of 2007 that would still be on the market, be considered grandfathered in?
A lot of the Fonsecas are grandfathered. A very minor brand that we own, which is called Cubita, is grandfathered as well. And we have a number of minor brands that are grandfathered. Unfortunately, Casala and Casa Magna are not grandfathered, because they are, Casa Magna was an 08 start, and Casada was the Q35 on our 35th year, was the first Casada ever sent to market. So that was 8 years ago, so we don't qualify with Casa Magna and Casada as grandfathered products.
Hmm. So, I mean, what's the plan? I mean, obviously there's still a lot of unknowns with the FDA, but is the plan in your mind to file and keep all the blends on the market? Do you see you trimming your portfolio, or just paying up and paying the ante and getting in?
Logan, the trimming will come from the testing that has to be done to the SKUs. If today we had a meeting where a laboratory from Wilson, North Carolina gave us somewhat of an indication of what the testing may cost. And for each SKU, you need 10 samples of one SKU. At 7x50 at Churchill, you need 10 Churchills to be tested.
Wow.
They couldn't give us a definite answer because they haven't done 50 ring gauges or 44 or 48s or 60 ring gauges, because cigars had never been obliged to go through testing. They've done cigarettes, which is a 10.5 millimeters and below. At 10.5 millimeters in diameter, the cost of doing 10 SKUs is about, according to them, $1,500 per cigar in the 10 sample cigar per SKU. So you're looking at $15,000 to test a SKU at 10.5 millimeters. If we go to 30 millimeter or a 28 or a 35, the cost, of course, will go up. We may be looking at $4,000 per sample in the SKU. That'd be $40,000 per SKU. On a brand like Fonseca with 10 different SKUs, we're looking at $400,000 to get the 10 SKUs approved.
Whew.
And that's just a classic Fonseca. We go to the vintage, the Serie F, the Vega de Fonseca. You start adding SKUs and the numbers continue, and it'll reach the millions. Now, there are companies in our industry that are geared and capable of facing such an expense. There are many companies in our industry that cannot face such expense, I being one of them. So, yes, we would have to trim our SKUs way down and see what remains and what stays for us to continue being in market. Again, this is all up in the air. The FDA has not given any indication. The lab doesn't have a definite number. So all this is speculative. But again, in speculation, you reach the millions. If you save 10%, you're still in the millions. If they add 10%, you're still in the millions. So numbers like that are difficult to meet just to test so we can remain in market. So there's a lot of things that we don't know what's going to happen. And we're waiting to see what the outcome is going to be. Now, those products that are not grandfathered, I'm sorry, John, I interrupted. Those products that are not grandfathered, we have a two-year period where we can apply and hope that the FDA approves the product before the two-year span runs out. And allegedly, if they don't approve it in 2 years, it's their fault, so you're allowed to continue until they approve or disapprove the product. If approved, you stay. Okay. If they disapprove, you're removed from market.
Got it. Here's a question. Is that now that bringing new blends to the market is kind of impossible, or unless you want to, you know, file and do all that work, what is one cigar that, not the name or anything, but like what tobacco would you have used in a cigar that you never did or wish you would have chance to? At least
you froze. What happened?
I think his internet connection might have cut out, but I think we got the gist of his question there.
Yeah.
Is my shit? Is it not working?
No, we got it.
We got it.
You're back.
Okay.
Logan, there's a number of tobaccos that are available that we haven't really used in a lot of products. There are varietals, Arapiraca in Brazil. There are new things coming up in Ecuador. The Tarapotos and the Pelo de Oro in Peru. A lot of things that we have not used a lot in blends that we have made, but are tobaccos that are very viable for blends and that could be continued to be used in more quantities than, let's say, Dominican Cuban seeds or Nicaraguan tobaccos, and make different blends with a different direction, a different style of what the tobacco will taste and smoke like, and create sensations that will be totally different. So that today those things are going to be the Cubita, for example, out of Colombia, is a seed that we have used very, very rarely to make blends. But they're viable, and now we just have to forget about them.
Just a reminder, you tuned into Cigar Chat, broadcast on the Armed Forces Radio Network, heard on CigarFederation.com, and, of course, YouTube. Subscribe to podcast, listen to it live, or download the podcast and listen to it offline on your drive to work, as I do every morning. Logan, this next segment is brought to us by who? I think Logan might have cut out again.
You know, and here I thought the Dominican would have been the one that... that cut out.
And it's
Logan in Texas. What the heck's
Logan,
going on?
Logan in Texas. Well, this next segment is brought to us by Drew Estate. Drew Estate, experience the Drew Diplomat app today. Go to Android or the Apple Play Store and download the Drew Diplomat app today. Sign up. Start experiencing the Drew Diplomat app. Manolo, I just, because you said Aberlour, and I haven't actually opened this ball in a while. I decided to go with something a little special here.
Oh, the Diabuna. That is a great, great drink.
It's beer. Yeah, it's got that delicious Spanish Oloroso, and the Sherry Oloroso is probably my favorite. If you have a Scotch that's been aged in Oloroso sherry cask, I'm pretty much guaranteed to enjoy it.
Oh, definitely. I'm jealous. Because you're having an Abuna, and I'm having an 18. Oh, gosh.
That 18 is pretty delicious, though. I would absolutely sit down with a bottle of that 18 anytime.
Come on down.
I will. Sorry about that, Logan. I did the read. We had some internet issues.
It's there. Okay.
Manolo, we have an audience question here, and I don't seem to be able to pull it up. We're having all kinds of technical problems tonight.
I'm telling you.
I blame Rob and I blame Google. Those are the two people that I blame tonight.
Yeah, well, Rob's always easy, good to blame.
So I think I recall the gist of the question here, and it was from Harley Holmes. Harley, if I get your question wrong, sorry about the phrasing, but Google is being fun tonight.
Sue us.
Yep, you can sue us along with the FDA. So Manolo, Harley had a really interesting question to me, which was obviously as we get older in life and as we get wiser and learn from our mistakes, unfortunately we can't take that knowledge back in time with us. But if you could take some information back with you, what singular thing would you think you would take back with you to maybe change some of the decisions you've made or improve some of the decisions you made in the past?
Well, I would have loved to have a crystal ball to divine what tobacco was going to do when I was playing with it. And unfortunately, we never had the crystal ball, so we had to learn by making mistakes. For example, we packed tobacco in what we call a tercio. A tercio, the palm tree sheds the bark once a year, and it's used for all kinds of different purposes, fences and thatching, and but also in Cuba, it was used to pack tobacco.
I didn't know that.
And, oh, yes. And we started packing tercios, gosh, 92 in Dominican Republic. Now, we had never put certain types of tobacco in tercios because we had never done that in Dominican Republic. And tercio in Spanish means a third. A third. And the name tercio, a third, comes because a mule could carry three of these packages. So one package was a third of the mule load. And it became a third, a tercio in Spanish. And the tercio, we put some tobaccos in that did not cotton or appreciate tercios. Because tercios is a type of packing opposed to burlap or plastic where there's no interference from the environment where the bales are stored.
Oh.
It's sort of a contained environment where you put the tobaccos in at a little higher moisture and less fermentation. So you do sort of a low temperature, long time curing and aging of the tobacco inside the tercio. Now you have to open the tercios every so many years, look at the tobacco, turn it around, put it back in the tercio, leave it there for another couple of years. And some of the varietals that we put into tercios turn into mush. They did not appreciate the tercio. So if I had my crystal ball, I would have avoided those mistakes. Unfortunately, in tobacco, we fight with tobacco every day, and there are no written rules. Tobacco tells you what to do, and you have to listen. And that's one of the first things you learn when you start playing with tobacco. You do not rule. Tobacco rules. And you have to play with it. I have a dear friend and also a customer in San Antonio, Texas, Mr. Bill Fink. And Mr. Bill Fink, he's a politician, a pig farmer, a lawyer, and a cigar maker. And I learned a whole lot from him. And he would tell me, Manolito, tobacco is like milking cows. They don't know it's Good Friday. They don't know it's New Year's. They don't know it's Christmas. You got to milk the cows every day. Tobacco, same way. If tobacco needs to be turned, you got to be there. I don't care what day of the year, what day of the week, whatever it is, you have to be there to turn and play with it. So tobacco rules, and we have to play with it. And that's the fun part of the whole business, is to play with tobacco and sometimes make it do what you want, sometimes do what it wants.
So it's interesting. You're talking about the palm tree, the outer bark being used to pack up tobacco. I mean, obviously at some point someone wasn't doing that, and then, you know, at some point they were doing that. So it's kind of an interesting, I guess it's maybe the philosophy you're just talking about, where there was kind of a need to pack the tobacco, so someone just kind of came up with the idea and tried it, or?
Back in Cuba, I suppose, again, we're talking of hundreds of years ago, and I wasn't there to witness the beginning, but I've always said that our companies would bring in all the families from Spain, and they would have nephews. That's why our company is called SAG. In Spanish, is Sobrinos de Antero González. Antero González is my great-grandfather's. Sobrinos is a word for nephew in Spanish. So our company, SAG, is called Nephews of Antero González. And at any time in Cuba, there were maybe 15, 20 nephews living in the factory, or rather the warehouse in Havana. And whenever they didn't have anything to do with them, because tobacco is not the whole year, they would put them to make things up. And this is how the tercio came about. This is how all the artwork came about in Cuba. This is how all the packaging of the manojos and the leaves covering the manojos and the counts, all these things were invented by this people that had nothing else to do except play with tobacco all day long until the new crop came in. And I wasn't there for the origins, but I've heard the story of my ancestors and how all this came about. But Cuba was mostly tercios for the high-grade tobaccos. The lower end, which was used for cigarettes, was packed in burlap and sold as bales, as we normally do today. Why we started doing tercios in Dominican Republic was because we found that if we, and we had to experiment because I had never put tobacco in tercios in my life before. So we had to play with it. And we found that by aging the tobacco in the tercio would make the tobacco not so violently change as we do in fermentation. In fermentation, we used to go to 135, 140 degrees Fahrenheit until the European Union determined that after 120 degrees Fahrenheit, nitrosamines developed. So we brought down the temperature, which extended the fermentation period. Instead of being 6 to 8 or 9 months, now it's 9 to 12 to 13 months. But in a tercio, you're looking at 4, 5, 6, 7 years. And holding tobacco for that long is a heavy financial load. And expensive to pack. It's a lot more expensive because the bales are made by pneumatic presses. And two guys can make 120 bales a day. In a press, they can make 15, 20 tercios a day. So the cost of each tercio is a lot more. And the time that you have to hold the tobacco is a lot longer, which puts a burden on the finances of any company. So we don't put all our tobaccos in tercios because we can't afford to do that. We put certain crops, parts of the crop, certain varieties, we put in tercios and hold them for a little while longer.
So how does the tercio change? Like, I mean, take the same varietal of tobacco, let's just say, I don't know, Criollo 98, let's just say, and you put it in just a normal Pallone, you're fermenting it to 120, you're flipping it versus the tercio. Like, I know it takes a lot longer, but like, how does it change the outcome of the flavor in the tobacco?
Well, remember that at any temperature, tobacco is going to change and oils are going to be lost. A little shine is going to be lost as well in getting rid of the ammonias and the nitrates and the potassiums and the chlorines that the tobacco brings with it. In fermentation, now at 120, it's a lot nobler. It's not as violent as it was 20, 30 years ago when we used to go to higher temperatures. So the tobaccos are not losing as many oils as they did 30 years ago. In the tercio, they lose even less. So if you put broadleaf wrapper from the valley in Connecticut in a tercio and let it sit for 7 or 8 years, the shine that that tobacco will have, the nobility that tobacco will have in taste, because the oils are going to be less decomposed, it is just mind-boggling. But eight to 10 years in a tercio is a long time to hold a lot of tobacco.
I guess there's kind of a bit of a crossover, like the Scotch industry, where, you know, yeah, you can make a fantastic product if you can sit on it for 8 years, but obviously you're not making money off that tobacco for that 8 years. And I guess at the end, I mean, what's the economics of that? Because that tobacco is going to be, that tobacco is going to have to cost so much more money to make up the lost time that it wasn't used.
Well, but for example, the Casada Reserva, which is a cigar that came out less than a year ago, The 97 crop from Dominican Republic was an outstanding crop, and my father and brother were still alive. And I said, let's put some of the tobacco from that crop away and just hide it. And they put a number of pounds away. They passed away, unfortunately, and I was left with the bales, and I have had to hide them since 1997. From the young ones, because they've always wanted to use that tobacco. Father, can we use that tobacco? No, leave it alone. That's mine. And fine, I had to put signs on the bales with my initials. Don't touch MQP. And finally, when the Casada Reserva came, the project came about, I said, let me do the blend. And they all looked at me and said, Dad, you're a dinosaur. You're not in tune with the market. I said, all right, I'll tell you what. I'll make two blends. And if you don't like them, I'll let you go with it. So I took my tobacco from 97, and I fused it with tobaccos that we're using today. So it's old tobaccos that I had put away in tercios since 97 and blended with tobaccos that we're using today, younger crops and tobaccos that were not tercio aged. I gave them the cigars to smoke. I gave them the the wrong one first, and they go, see, we told you, this is not good. I said, okay, we'll try the other one and see what happens. And they all start smoking, and they go, holy mother of God, what is this? I go, we'll see. Old people can still do a couple of nice...
couple of tricks.
Dinosaurs are still, you know, can still run around in the fields and pick daisies too, you know. So that's what happened with the Reserva, but that's what old tobaccos bring, a nobility that is enhanced by the new tobaccos with a little more intensity, but the nobility of the sensations in the palate are kept, and the impact in the palate is so complex without having the intensity to make you sick or make you sweat, or it's just a middle to a little higher than middle medium smoke with a lot of flavor that your palate just goes nuts playing with it. But again, it's very difficult to hold tobacco from 97. Now this crop, this year's crop, the 15-16, I'm saving some tobacco of this crop because it's been an outstanding crop. I may not live another 19 years to play with it, but I'm going to save some and hide it again. And down the road, somebody may find it and come up with a different thing if the regulations and new protocols and legislation allow us to create new things. If not, we'll make them for ourselves and smoke them here and sell them in Europe.
It's true.
There you go.
Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, you're tuned into Cigar Chat, broadcast around the world on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Tune into podcast. You can sign up to Cigar Federation on any podcast app by searching for Cigar Federation. Logan, this next segment is brought to us by who?
Have you already done one or not?
I did the DE segment, you betcha.
Okay. You should have left that. That's my favorite. Awesome. Next one's brought to you by Fratello. Fratello Oro is a brand new cigar from Omar and Fratello Cigars. Check it out if you're a local tobacconist, FratelloCigars.com. That's it.
Go ahead with your question.
I'm fascinated by this whole Techio thing. Like, is it mostly binder, filler, or wrapper that you age in this, or can it be any of the three?
All three.
Okay.
Any of the three. Now, tobaccos that go in tercios need to be of higher primings. Secos and volados don't cotton to tercios.
Okay.
You're looking at heavy visos, ligeros.
Ligeros. Okay. That makes sense.
But those are the ones that withstand the test of time. As in putting cigars away, a cigar that has been made with secos have a shorter life span than cigars that have ligero and visos in the blend.
I mean, I could definitely see, because there's so many ways you could experiment with aging tobacco and different methods of aging tobacco and, you know, different containers of aging tobacco. I feel like, you know, just in the aging process alone, one could spend half of a lifetime just experimenting with all kinds of different techniques to see what happens.
But, John, I have friends who are also my colleagues and my competitors. But first of all, they're my friends. And I've always set the example. If Carlos Fuente Jr., Henke Kellner, Jose Cejas, Nestor Plasencia, Benji Menendez, Daniel Nunez, myself, were in a room and we had 2 bales of wrapper, 4 bales of binder, and 8 bales of filler, the 8 of us would come up with 35 different blends. Because we each have our own way of going about doing things.
Yeah.
In growing, in fermentation, in sorting, and in blending.
Now, you know, Manolo, that would make probably the best case of reality television ever put on television. If you could get all of those guys together and do a 10-episode stint on blending cigars, I think that would be the best episode of reality television ever created.
Well, we've had a lot of fun arguing with each other about fermentation, sorting, and blending. And again, each has his own little book, and we accept changes as I have and others have as well. But we all have our ways to get to the same end, which is pleasure.
So with one of the things I want to, and I don't really want to talk about the FDA stuff because it's, you know, negative and frankly,
it's freaking depressing.
It's depressing. And I, most of the words I want to use to describe it, I can't say on the Armed Forces Radio Network segment because they're not appropriate. But there was recently a big victory, or at least a victory against the FDA, which allowed for packaging changes, which allows the manufacturer to have a little bit more flexibility in managing their own product. Is that something you can foresee CASADA doing in the next few years, is making any packaging changes? I mean, you guys obviously have really, really, especially for the, you know, all the different Oktoberfest and keg-type products, really nice packaging. But do you see yourself changing any of the packaging or changing any of the bands?
Well, 10 days ago, the FDA lost an argument whereby we're now allowed to make small changes in our packaging as long as the small change in our packaging does not increase the health risk of the smoker. Which, of course, Oktoberfest 2016, if I change a 6 for a 7,
yep,
where is the health risk of this?
Right.
So they finally accepted that, yes, you can change a 6 for a 7 for next year without increasing the health risk of the smoker. So, yes, that in that particular instance, we're allowed, as long as we don't change the cigar count of the packaging.
Right.
We're allowed to make certain small changes in the packaging.
Well, I see that, you know, because I'm a Canadian, I tend to be a bit of an optimist. So I'm hoping that hopefully is a sign of perhaps more victories to come, because, you know, any victory at this point is a good victory. And because, you know, I'm passionate about cigars, I have to stay positive. I have to hope that there's going to be at least some positive outcomes there.
Well, I'm with you all the way, because Lord knows we need to have some leniency in the draconian protocols set forth by the FDA.
Yeah.
Now, I heard you say that this is being broadcast to Armed Forces Network.
That's right, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
May I do a commercial?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Staff Sergeant Manuel Quesada, 1st Battalion, 8th Infantry, Recon Platoon, 4th Infantry Division, USARV.
Wow.
I didn't know you were in the military.
I did some reading. I had no idea that you served.
I was a draftee back in 1969, and I did my service back in 69-70.
Thank you very much for your service.
Thank you for acknowledging. We were the most vilified veterans in the history of the United States Armed Forces.
Yeah.
We were not in a popular conflict back then.
But, of course, the soldier does not choose the conflict, unfortunately. That's not how it works out.
No, you go and do your duty, and you don't expect any gratitude, but certainly you don't expect to be vilified by serving.
Oh, no.
I think, at least hopefully, I hope that in the last few years people have kind of come around to recognize and really honor a lot of the veterans of all of the service, you know, because, again, it is a serious sacrifice. And I think most of the people that tune into our show, and certainly obviously all the people that listen to the Armed Forces Radio Network, I'm sure appreciate that as well.
I apologize for the commercial, but anyway.
Oh, no. It was a very good commercial.
Yep.
I just think it matters where you live. I mean, I've never seen in Texas a veteran get vilified. You know what I mean? Because obviously Texas is very, very conservative, very pro-military. But I think it's just all about where you live. But it is a shame that, you know, I mean, hell, I mean, I've given up my seat in first class to, you know, someone in the military before just to say thank you. You know what I mean? And I see that kind of stuff all the time. Texas, at least.
I thank you for that.
So. And it's tough, Manoa. I'm a big dude, and I need that extra leg room, sir. You don't understand what kind of sacrifice that was.
Let me tell you, an economy seat beats the food that we used to get in the Army. So you were in luxury class.
That's probably true. That's probably true.
Yeah, I've heard some of the new MREs that they're creating are actually not too bad. That's the because I've heard that there's actually websites that will order Army ration MREs, and they'll do reviews, And from what I understand, the current MREs are a significant improvement over ones even from 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, I missed all that. We had C-Rats and Charlie Rats were not that good.
Yeah.
And heavy is all good go, too.
Yeah, I guess they'd have to be to keep you going throughout the entire day. You need something quick, and flavor was a secondary consideration.
It wasn't even in the equation.
It wasn't even a part of the equation.
Eat fast, drink your water, and get moving.
And move, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, back to cigars. I apologize.
Oh, no, I very much appreciate that. So, obviously, with each of your children coming into the factory and each of them kind of putting their fingerprints in the industry and so for you, what has been some of the most interesting things or perhaps some of the most challenging things that they've done as a part of coming into the factory?
Well, one of the things that they did, and I had never done, when the 35th year came about, they decided the first Quesada cigar is going to market. And I was scared, I have to admit. They came up with the Quesada 35th anniversary, which I went to the RTDA back then, now IPCPR, and we made 1,000 boxes. And I thought I was going to smoke all 1,000 boxes over the rest of my life. And they sold the 1,000 boxes in 30 minutes.
Wow.
Wow.
So I was very happy, and it became a cult cigar. I still have a couple left in my private inventory. And it was the very first Quesada that came out in market, and that was because of the pushing of the young ones to come up with a Quesada cigar, which I'd never been before.
I got to ask, you've been 35 years, but you never did a Quesada cigar, which is, you know, your last name. What was the reason behind that? Because most people want to put their name on a cigar. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, sir. Because we had Fonseca. Remember, we made Romeo and Julieta for 20 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Until Hawk O'Rourke sold to Altadis, the brand, in 97. So we had brands that were out in market, and I was making product for Romeo Julieta and a couple of other importers as well. So I didn't want to have a name that people would think that I was favoring the Quesadas over other things that I was making for market and third parties. And that was perhaps a narrow way of looking at things, which the young ones immediately expanded and broadened the horizon by saying, "Sit down, Dinosaur, we're coming out with Quesada." So I said, "Okay, let's go." And that was the beginning of that.
So conversely, I have to ask, what's one of the most frustrating things that they've done in the factory since they've come in? What's sort of been the thing that's been hardest to take?
John, as you and Logan are still way too young, if we add both your ages, you don't come anywhere near my age.
You'd be shocked how old I am.
You'd be shocked how old John is, actually.
Shocked.
Well, he looks like he's 18 for crying
out. I know, that's the thing.
I would card him anywhere, anytime.
I do. Every time I go to the United States, I get carded.
Are you 40
and then they start
now?
Laughing.
I'm sorry?
Are you 40 now?
I think 41.
41.
Yep. Good Lord.
I know. That's good clean living right there.
It's all this clean living, the cigars and the scotch. Just like
my grandma. God bless you. Keep at it. Anyway, a change for people that have been doing things, not in a rut, but doing things within the boundaries of knowledge and experiences and demands, change becomes difficult.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to let go and start letting them do things that I would do myself earlier. For example, my daughter Raquel, the eldest of my daughters, is now a lead blender in the factory. She is responsible for a number of projects. If I may take 45 seconds to tell you a story.
Oh, yes.
The Fonseca Cubano Limitado, which has been on market, gosh, since 2000 or something, 2000. I had made the blend for that Cubano Limitado, and I had told Raquel, my daughter, who was already in the factory floor, I said, "Start making the Cubano Limitados." She comes into my office, puts a cigar on my desk, and runs out. I take the cigar, I light it, and as soon as I light it, she has taken my blend and tweaked it ever so slightly in a different direction. I call her back on the PA, Raquel. 231 was my call sign back then. She knew she had to come see me. She comes in sort of sideways. She thinks I'm going to strangle her. And I look at her and I go, you changed my blend. She goes, yes, Dad, I did. I go, well, yours is better. Go with it. And on each box of Fonseca Cubano Limitado, it says by Raquel and Manuel Quesada. That was her first foray in blending. And today she's one of the lead blenders in our factory.
Wow.
You had call signs in your factory?
Yes,
like
sir.
231 meant get up here now. What were the other call signs?
No, 231 was me. That was
you.
Yeah. So when you heard Logan come to 231, you had to come to my office.
Okay.
How often was that good news and how often was that bad news?
When the young ones came in, a lot of times not good news.
Not good news.
Again, it's difficult to change every so once in a while, but now I have learned my lesson and now I am very open to accepting new things and going with the flow. We're at a restaurant in New York. My wife, my daughters, and some friends. And there was a little discussion between Raquel and my other daughter, Patricia, and myself about things in the factory. And my wife says, looks at me and says, Manolo, go with the flow. I look at her and I go, I am the flow.
I am the flow.
Of course, I haven't heard the last of that yet, but that was my answer back then. Today I go, yeah, I'm going with the flow now.
So sometimes it's just easier, as they say, you know, if the river's going to take you, you just put your feet down river and just kind of cross your arms.
And paddle down, yeah.
Yeah. Manolo, last question for you this evening before we wrap up our Armed Forces Radio Network segment. If someone could try one cigar in your lineup, what cigar would you recommend they try?
I would take your answer and divide it into two parts because I would love for you to take an Nicaraguan and for you to take a Dominican because that way you have two different places and at least you get 2 days of enjoyment instead of just one. I would say take a Casa Magna Colorado and take a Quesada Reserva Privada. And if push comes to shove, you can only have one, I would stay with the Quesada Reserva Privada.
Now, that's the one with that tobacco you said goes back to 1997.
Yes, sir.
Correct? Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Sir.
That's already on
that
my radar.
That was a good cigar.
Yeah,
that was a good cigar.
Like a good cigar.
I remember, that's what that one is, with the black band.
Yes, sir.
Yes. That was a great cigar. I remember that one now.
Batter of Mac, it's that one right there.
Yeah, that's it. The one that's got Pennsylvania in the filler, right?
Yes, sir. That's the new tobaccos that I brought in to fuse.
Okay.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our Armed Forces Radio Network segment. Thanks very much for all our live listeners who have tuned in. Thanks very much for all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners. As Rob says every week, you guys are built to do things we are not built to do, except for Manolo, who has absolutely been there and done that. Thank you very much for your service, and make sure to tune in next week when we have Eric Espinosa. And
oh, we have him?
That is going to be a hysterical show.
It's going to be an S show.
I know that I'll be doing.
Are you going to help?
I will definitely be helping because otherwise the language.
I can't control that guy.
It will be out of control. So make sure to tune in next Thursday at our regular time of 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks very much.
Adios.
Well, good night.
And we're fucking back. And we're back. And we're still being broadcast, but not on the Armed Forces Radio Network. So you can say whatever you want now. Manolo Ito.
Manolito.
Manolito.
There you go.
Manolito.
Yeah. Well, you haven't made me cuss yet, so I'm going to, you know.
You did really well. In fact, Logan dropped a cuss word before you.
What did I say?
I think you were half hanging up, and I have at the 31-35 minute mark. You said shit.
No, I didn't.
You corrected yourself, but I had to put it down because you know gotta keep on top of that.
I'm sorry, man.
Well, Logan, if you're Catholic, go to confession.
I'm not
He's
Catholic.
Not Catholic.
I'm Lutheran, which is like the Diet Cola. It's like the Diet Cola version.
Well, flagellate yourself in penance.
probably should. Probably should. I need to get
what's
some Jesus.
What's ironic about that, Logan, is that I am no longer Lutheran, but I was raised Lutheran as well. I think we talked about that before, which is
we
such
did.
A strange thing because we come from very different
it
backgrounds.
It is so strange. It's true. It's very true. It's it's a very interesting deal. And it's the Missouri Synod too, which is like the yeah. crazies. But anyways, we don't have to get into that.
Catholics do shame. Jewish people do guilt. What do Lutherans do?
That's a good question.
I don't know. It's a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. It's a little bit of Jewish guilt, especially from your mom.
Oh, yeah, I got a lot of guilt from mom.
Yeah, a lot of guilt. Or your grandmother. Man, can the grandmothers lay down guilt like there's no tomorrow? fathers do disappointment. They don't do anger. They just say they're just disappointed in you. And I always find the disappointment is always so much tougher to take than the anger. I'd much rather have the anger than the disappointment. The
anger is right off the bat and done. Yeah. Disappointment lasts for a long time.
Yeah.
That's true.
So Manolo, I have to ask. So you've obviously got all of these tobaccos. What tobaccos have you not had a chance to, if you could talk about it, what tobaccos have you not had a chance to play with or experiment with that you would like to?
Well, Wisconsin, which grows tobacco, I've never used Wisconsin tobacco.
Wisconsin?
I had sure. no idea.
The state of Wisconsin. Are you familiar with the Parodies, the Kentucky Cheroots, the Tuscany made in Scranton, Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
The wrapper in those cigars is from Wisconsin.
Seriously?
No kidding.
As God is my witness.
No, I believe you. I'm just kind of shocked because I like associate Wisconsin with like cheese and like the land of a thousand lakes. Or is that Minnesota? Yeah, that's
camping.
Right. Yeah. I mean, good people. But like I would never have guessed. But Manolo, I got a proposition for you. I got a proposition. So my family, John's laughing because I ask everyone this, and I haven't gotten any takers yet, but I'm going to find a taker one of these days. And I think you might be the right guy for it because of your background. You guys grow some tobacco. So anyways, my family has about 15 acres of land that is in North Platte, Missouri, which is right above the Missouri River. And they used to grow cigarette tobacco there. And then they got subsidies and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, my grandparents recently passed away and they left the land to my mom, you know, and all that stuff. But anyways, the subsidies ran out. So we're no longer getting, you know, the $500,000 check from the government not to grow tobacco on it. And I'm kind of pissed off about this. So I'm making an offer to anybody in the cigar industry. If you want to do that, use the land and grow some Missouri Mule Ligero. The land, it's open. The only requirement is that you have to teach me how to grow the tobacco when you're there.
Well, we can learn you that here.
Well, this is true, but it won't be Missouri soil, which is quite fertile.
Yeah, but once you learn the techniques, it doesn't matter what soil you grow it in.
Yeah, well, it's just, Manolo, quit trying to, like, logic drop me here and, like, confuse me. Like, my whole point is I need someone like you to come up.
I got an easy way out for you.
What's that?
First, you write your Congress people, your senator and your House rep, telling them that you want the buyout reinstalled because you need the money. That's the first thing. Second thing is you write the FDA and you tell them, I want to grow tobacco in Missouri, and that's going to be a new tobacco, new product, so you have to allow that because I'm a U.S. farmer and I need the money. Once you get those two approved, call me back.
Okay. If I get those two, this is the farthest I've gotten with anybody so far.
Now in the meantime, if we want us to learn you about growing, get your butt over here.
I know. I could so easily do it too. I knew that's one thing. I've seen a ton of factories, you know, and all that, but I really haven't spent any time growing. I mean, no, like seeing the actual process. Like I get it. It goes from the beds to the ground and all this kind of stuff, but I've never really seen it to understand how much fertilizer you put on the ground. Are you using like what kind of irrigation are you using? How much water, you know, are you stock cutting? Are you like when you do this or that? That's something I'd really like to learn.
Well, again, it depends what you're growing. Fillers and binders are grown totally different than wrappers.
Right. Wrappers are shade grown typically.
No, not necessarily, because a lot of the sun growns are being used as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Broadleaf is a sun-grown wrapper, and it's a very popular wrapper. Mexicans are sun-grown. A lot of Dominicans are sun-grown. Nicaragua has sun-grown wrappers, and they're excellent, excellent wrappers. So it depends what you're looking for and what you want to do. But wrappers are a little different growing procedures than fillers and binders. A hole in filler is passable. A hole in wrapper is not good.
Not good at all.
Logan Millerman from the chat room says he thinks you've come up with the next name of your next color project, which is the Missouri Mule.
No, man. I got a lot of really good names that are pre-FDA certified. Manolo, also, if you need an interesting name for a cigar release in the next 2 years, you should come talk to me. I've got several that would probably fall in the young ones category. But yeah, I've got a lot of good ones.
Well, what city are you in?
I'm in Austin right now.
Okay, I'm not going to Austin. I'll be in Dallas and Houston 10 days from now.
I might win like the 19th because I'll be in Dallas the 19th for work.
Powder and Mac, what's a week from Sunday is the 18th, 19th Monday. I land in Dallas.
Where are you going to be at in Dallas?
I haven't the foggiest idea.
If you're going to be in North Dallas, Plano area at Lone Star Cigar, then I will be there.
I'll more than likely visit Lone Star, yeah.
Yeah, see? There you go. See, I'm telling you. It's all going to work out.
Making things happen.
I'm making things happen.
Where are you today?
Oh, me? Sorry, where am I?
John, yeah, you. Where are you today?
I am in the overcast Calgary, Alberta, Canada today.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. We like to call it the Texas of Canada because in so many ways this province is very much the Texas of Canada. Our politics are opposite from most Canadians. We have a lot of oil. One of our major exports is beef, so we get along pretty well with the Texans.
You know, if I'd have known that, I wouldn't have done the program. I don't talk to foreigners.
See, I don't like your kind.
The thing about Canadians and why they're so shifty is because they blend in really well, and you can't tell the Canadians until you ask them. You ask them if they can come on your boat, and that's when you get them because you say, "Are you going to come on my boat?" And you ask where your boat is, and that's how you know.
Well, we have a Canadian gentleman who had married a Lafayette girl in Louisiana, and they had a baby boy. And the baby boy, before all this happened, came to the cigar shop where I was in Lafayette. And I said, can I talk to the little boy? I put him on my knee and I said, listen, look at this. This is in, I put my finger in my hand. And if I take the finger out, what is it? And he goes, out. I go, he's not a Canuck, thank you. You didn't say oat.
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 A boot.
But that was just a joke while drinking in Louisiana, but
I like it. The Canadians are used to being ribbed abroad, so you know we tend to have some pretty thick skin. And Canadians are usually well traveled. I mean, most
they
of
are.
Them
are.
Travel all over the world. So
you guys get all that vacation.
We do. We're very.
You like
very
Brazil? Vacation. Like you never work.
Oh, I don't know about that. We work a lot. We work hard, but we play hard.
Welcome.
I don't know if
Welcome to my world.
So I have to ask Manola, like these days with your kids helping out in the factory, how has that influenced your daily routine? Because I'm sure, you know, 20 years ago the routine was significantly different than today, and hopefully the hours are a little bit less. But how has your routine changed over that time?
Completely, because there's many things that they're doing that I'm not doing anymore. However, I have increased my travel time to go do events and visit stores in different states of the union. So I've been traveling the latter years for a lot more miles than I used to before. So traveling has come into the play rather than spending all my hours in the factory. Though I do spend a lot of hours in the factory still, but now I'm traveling as well.
Now, I mean, because I know a lot of people in the industry travel for events and travel for meetings. Do you enjoy the travel aspect?
I was going to ask the same question.
Traveling every day becomes a little more difficult because of all the regulations and the crowding because of the flights have been reduced and there's more people every flight and the lines are long. And particularly when you travel and you spend one night in one town and you change towns every night, that has become a little more hard for me to do nowadays because of my old age. But hey, I can still do it, so I do it.
Do you miss going into the? I mean, you must miss going to the factory and kind of the day to day operations, because I'm sure that's kind of the heart and soul of the factory. And
well, we have to look at everything that goes on.
Yeah.
We have to look at the tobaccos that are fermenting, the tobaccos that are aging, the tobaccos that are being sent to the floor, the temperature, the moistures. We have to look at the cigars that are being made. We have to smoke regular production. We have to smoke from the aging room. We have to smoke and develop new blends. So we're always doing something that's routine, because you have to walk through the factory every day, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 times.
Yeah.
Check on all these things that are happening in a world that is very subjective. Because cigar making is an art, and cigar making needs to have certain protocols met. And the machines that we use are human beings, which is a very complex machinery.
True enough.
And we have fights with the wife and sons that are sick and school opening, so we need money for uniforms and books. And we have debt, and we have hangovers, and we have all kinds of things that we cannot bring to the table where the cigars are being made. Because we have to pay attention to what's going on. The blend is still being done in the hand. The fillers have to be straight. The cigar has to be evenly done, so there's no holes or knots in the. So there's a lot of things that have to be looked at, that each cigar has to be looked at individually. And I have not found the market for a cigar that I take, cut the head off, smoke it, and I sell it to the guy. Yeah, it's fine. Give me $10 and here's the cigar. I haven't found that market quite yet.
Once
we put a cap on the cigar, we're done. The next person that's going to test that cigar is the gentleman that paid good money for it and is going to have a good time with it. So we have to be very careful not to disappoint him. And this is where marrying to quality is sort of a mistress that we have in our marriages. Our legal marriages are one thing, and our tobacco is a mistress that has to be taken care of all day as well.
So you probably had a lot of mentors, Manolo, through the years. What's one thing that someone, a mentor, that has taught you that stuck with you? I mean, the quality thing, but like one thing that stuck with you that you learned that you've never forgotten?
Well, Mr. Bill Fink from Texas once told me, Manolito, once they buy the cigar, they can do with it as they please, because now it's their cigar.
And
if they want to dip it in brandy, if they want to lick it before they light it, if they want to use a toothpick to make a hole in it, if they want to use it as suppositories, that is their thing to do. You no longer have a say in what they do with their cigars. And that has stayed with me forever, because it is a fact that is a truth that has to be reckoned with.
So I'm assuming when you were at events many years ago or years ago, people were not cutting a cigar or doing things with them that you didn't approve of, and you were trying to coach?
No, I always tell cigar smokers, and I try to be very polite about it, because, of course, many cigar smokers have given me lessons on how to make cigars, and I have to sit there and endure it.
That's awesome.
We're at a convention many years ago, and Benjamin Endes and I are sitting at a table talking, and Benjamin Endes is a legend in our industry. I don't know if you're familiar with Benji or not.
Yeah.
But Benjamin is a gentleman and a legend in our industry. Yeah. And Benji and I are talking shop in the RTDA, and this gentleman comes over and starts telling us how to make cigars. And somebody come up to him and goes, do you know who you're talking to? He goes, no. He goes, well, these two people can teach you how to make cigars with their eyes closed and with a bandage over their mouth. So leave them alone, because you have no idea what you're doing.
They'll forget more about tobacco today than you'll learn in a lifetime.
But I have been taught many a lesson by smokers on how to make cigars, and I just sit there and go, yeah, we'll give it some thought and see what happens. But again, for example, I am a very much in favor of cutting a cigar at the head with a cut that gives you as close a cut to the cigar ring gauge that you're smoking. Because in doing so, the smoke will come back at you in a straight way rather than cutting a small hole in the back where the smoke funnels and precipitates tars, which are very bitter and not fun to have. So people that use the round thing that
makes punch cutter.
I say, if you have a 38 for a Lancero, that's wonderful. If you have a 58 for a 60, that's wonderful. But do not use a Lancero 38 for a 60 ring gauge, because you're not going to have fun with the cigar, and you're going to blame us, the manufacturers, for the mistakes that or the hardship that the cigar is going to make you endure.
So, I 100% agree with you.
So I do that kind of thing as a suggestion. Do not hit your cigar on the ashtray, because you crack the wrapper and it will unravel on you. And then you're going to blame me for the cigar, the wrapper unraveling you on you. And it's really not our fault. And so on and so forth. But we do it in a very kind and gentle way as a suggestion. And once they buy it, they do as they please. But the culprit always is the manufacturer. So we try.
Of course.
We try to avoid phone calls that say, my cigar unraveled on me. I remember many, many decades ago, well, I was called by a retailer telling me that our cigar smelled like pipe tobacco. I go, well, gee, that's funny, because we don't have any pipe tobacco anymore here. The factory, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to be in your city a couple of weeks from now. Save me a couple of, I'll take a look around and see what's going on. Sure enough, I show up, and the cigars are next to the bulk pipe tobacco that's open, and the cigar boxes are open as well. And I go, you know, maybe if you move the cigar place or the pipe tobacco to a different place, you may avoid this situation. He looks at me and he goes, gee, you're right. I go, thank you. Yes.
Yes, I am.
Yes, I am. I knew that before I showed up, but I'm glad you recognize that now.
Oh, Manolo, that's awesome. All right. Well, I know we're getting ready to wrap up, but yeah. Manolo, I can tell you're probably an interesting guy to hang out with, and obviously had a ton of funny stories. Tell me the funniest story from your time in the cigar industry that you can remember that you're allowed to share.
It's not funny, because it was a learning experience.
Okay.
Water and tobacco are good friends at very specific times.
Okay.
And rainwater is deadly. We do not want rainwater anywhere except in the farms. And now with irrigation, we don't even want rainwater anymore. But I used to work a lot of broadleaf tobacco from very old crops back in the late 70s and very early 80s. And a particular crop that came in was a very old crop, and the tobacco came in paper bundles. And broadleaf, as you know, is a very long leaf. So two leaves put head to head on a bundle, the bundle must have been 5.5 feet long.
Right.
And this was so old that it was like a brick. And I have to case, I had to wet this tobacco, and I didn't, and I'm trying to take it apart, and I'm having a very difficult time with it. And an old Spaniard that used to work for us in Cuba, who was then working for Mr. Fink in Texas, was in the factory when I was attempting to case that tobacco. And he looks at me and says, Manolito, come here. Let me teach you how to do this. Get me a hose. And I go, what? Get me a hose. I go, okay, I'm not going to argue. So I gave him a hose connected to a faucet. Let's open the faucet. I go, Severiano, are you sure? Manolito, just shut up and open the faucet. I open the faucet, he takes this hose and starts hosing the water down the bricks of tobacco. And I'm sitting there saying, what in the good God bless are you doing? He says, this is how you case tobacco that is in this condition. All you have to do is make sure it's above the floor in boards that have openings so it drains. Let it stand till tomorrow. Tomorrow morning we'll come back and you tell me what we did.
Okay.
And we left. Next morning we came back, I opened the bundle and the tobacco just fell out, and it was fluffy and it was nice and it was silky. And I'm sitting there saying, holy mother of God, and I've been hosting tobacco ever since.
Really?
Well, those that I have found.
That are that old, yeah.
Several old bales that I have found that need a... Now, of course, with modern technology, there's vacuum chambers where you pour steam in and it does the same thing. But the hose is always a funny thing to bring out because people go, are you out of your mind? You don't do that. Open the faucet and let's play with it.
So it was, I like it.
It wasn't funny, but it was a learning experience that today is funny because you don't hose tobacco. That's not what you do.
That's awesome.
Well, guys, listen, I would love, and let me tell you, you were kind enough to say that you would love to sit and talk to me, or with me, rather. But I have two requirements when that happens.
Okay. One,
we have something to drink, preferably a dark or brown liquor that speaks foreign languages. Or even, well, because the South is considered foreign, so bourbon falls into that category. and cigars. I need those two things to sit down and converse with anyone. Otherwise, it becomes a harrowing experience.
I think we could make that happen.
Then, gentlemen, I'm at your service here, or if we meet in Dallas, hell, we'll have a drink and a cigar, and I'll bore you with all my... uninteresting experiences in life.
Oh, no. They're very interesting. But, yeah, no, I'll have to check it out because if you are going to be, I'll probably be there Monday. I have meetings in the afternoon. So probably, yeah, around.
Are you familiar with a town by the name of David Brophy?
David Brophy?
No, Brophy's our rep in Texas. I'm going to be with him. We're doing an event in Houston with George Awad. So I'll be in Dallas and Houston on the 19th, starting on the 19th.
Okay. And you're going to be in Dallas the 19th, though?
That Monday, I land in Dallas at 6 o'clock. Yes, sir.
Okay.
And well, I think I'm there Tuesday and Wednesday, and then we go to Houston.
Okay. Got it.
All right, gentlemen. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to sit and talk with you.
Mucho gusto. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
And I apologize if I disappointed anyone.
No.
No, not a chance.
Best show we've had in a while.
Yep.
You're too kind.
Easily.
You're too kind, Logan, but thank you.
And, hey, man. We're
going to have Terrence on my pairing show in just about 3 weeks here to do the pairing with the Quesada Oktoberfest on September 21st. So.
Oh, dear. Well, that will be a lot of fun. TJ is a big fan of beer. And his knowledge of beers is not too limited.
Not very much, no.
All right.
Thank you so much, and look forward to speaking to you in the future.
And Miami at your service.
All right, Manolo. Thank you for coming on.
Appreciate you having me.